Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we had a midweek calcio action. So Alex and I at the top are going to update our Scudetto odds. It's a very intriguing season, to say the least. Then I'm going to pick Alex's brain on a curiosity that I have. I'm fascinated by the fact that pretty much the four top players in Serie A this season are former Man United players. Of course, we have more calcio coming up this weekend. So Thousand Names has his game picks on deck. We have a special part of the podcast for our patrons. And once a month, as usual, we have our dear friend, Napoli Outsider. If you are a patron, you're going to hear 90 minutes of him and I chatting calcio. If you're a regular subscriber today, you'll hear him and I talk about Napoli for about a half hour. But I cannot stress enough, I really think the patron chats I do with him once a month are among the greatest content that I'm involved with. So this should be a fun episode. But I'm joined first by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, who at the beginning of the season, he had picked Inter to win. Actually, I picked Juve to win the Scudetto, and I had Inter. So Alex, you know, it's been an interesting week in Serie A. Also, we have Inter no longer in the Champions League. We've seen Juve now with De Ligt and Ronaldo back. I've always said that I really wasn't going to pass judgment on Juve until I saw a few games with Ronaldo and De Ligt. So we've had those in the books. So I think it's fair to talk a little bit more about Juve. Milan, of course, have done fairly well without some substantial absences, especially Ibrahimovic, although it sounds like he'll be back against Sassuolo. And then I have to say, you know, I do have to leave a little bit open to the field because Roma has as many points as Juve and Napoli have a tough squad. So, Alex, looking at the landscape, would you change your pick on Juve and kind of how many chances do you give the Inters, the Milan, and the other teams at the top of the standings?
Yeah, I'm going to answer this really raw and natural. So my math might not be perfect when I give odds and percentages, but I'll kind of talk it out. So I still am 1,000% sticking by Juventus as the Scudetto winner. And I say that for the main reason that this obviously hasn't been a flawless start of football for Pirlo and this season's Juve team. But when you look at the facts, David, they still haven't lost. They still haven't lost.
Yeah.
They've had way too many draws for their liking. They still haven't lost, and they have the best defense in the league. So what that tells me is they're building in the right direction. They're starting from the back. And of course, I mean, they didn't even have all of their players available to start the season. You just mentioned De Ligt. But they're starting with a foundation that they can stand on, in my opinion. So if they know they can keep a clean sheet, and of course, that's not just this Juve team. That's been a huge identity of theirs during this dominance they've had. But if they know they can keep a clean sheet, great. It gives Pirlo, it gives all the players confidence that they're going to be in every game. They should have that confidence anyway because they're Juve, but just with this current team, it shows them we're in every game. So what we need to do simply is we need to score more. We need to score more. Of course, they're not leading the league in goals. There are a handful of teams above them in goals. They're still close. They got 24 goals scored, but that's the next step. And if I were to tell you that, oh man, Juve have been sputtering a lot of the season. They have six draws. Morata's been carrying them. They've been without De Ligt. You'd probably think, oh my God, they're not going to win it this year. They're not going to win just based on those facts. Well,
yeah,
they got players back now. And obviously there are some young pieces, including the manager, but some young pieces like Kulusevski, McKinney, who are really nice players, but they're only going to get more and more and more comfortable with the team. And Pirlo, I believe, is only going to get more and more confident as a manager, as a coach. So I can't go away from them. And of course, De Ligt. I mean, I still think once he now has a nice run of health, he is going to represent himself as one of the best young defenders in the world, of course, but really best young players. So that's still a huge player that you have so much potential to fill out. So I'm still sticking by them confidently, because if this is bad Juve, and I put bad in quotes, but if this is bad Juve, ooh, then I feel pretty good about how they might turn up for the rest of the season. But I can't go on that whole spiel about why I'm sticking by Juve and make it seem like it's so obviously going to be Juve, because Milan, I know they haven't had the greatest form recently compared to maybe how the season has gone so far, but they have shown the ability to win all types of games, of course, without Zlatan as well. So it's about damn time they're just taken seriously flat out this season. They have showed us, I think, a good enough variety of ways to win, teams they've beat, that you have to say they have a good shot. So good at percentage wise, I don't know. Since I'm so confident about Juve, I still feel like I'm only giving Milan maybe 20-25% chances of winning the Scudetto. And some of that, of course, is also just based on history, status quo, your line. And then Inter is really, David, I gotta be honest, it's the only other team I'm giving a chance to win the Scudetto. I know that you just mentioned Roma have the same amount of points. I know Napoli aren't far behind, either is Sassuolo. But I'm really only giving it to the two Milans and Juve. And the reason why I take Inter so seriously is kind of what you said. They're out of the Champions League. So really, that is Conte's bread and butter. Focus on the league. Focus on the league. I mean, that is what he's good at. So if I'm giving Milan somewhere around 20-25%, I'll give Inter not much more. I'll give him 35%. And then you mathematicians out there, I'm giving Juve the rest. I'm giving Juve the rest. I'm still sticking by it. I'm not being stubborn. It's just a true, true belief of mine. So what about you, David?
Yeah, I liked your analysis. And look, the point you make that if you looked from the outside and said Juve didn't have De Ligt, Ronaldo for a while, they've struggled and whatnot, you'd think it'd be a lot worse. So I think that's a very, very important point. Obviously, they've won 9 in a row. I've said it many times. This Juve squad really, really intrigues me. I think it really has the potential to be one of the best Juves of this cycle. So look, I think you sticking with Juve makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm going to talk through kind of and I've been messing around with the percentages this morning. I hear you on having some doubts on Roma and Napoli and saying, you know, it's really the only three at the top. The only reason why I'm going to throw them in the mix is this is really a crazy season with the games every 3 days. And there's just very hard to get a real feel for the league. And the other thing with Roma that I think it's important to mention, they are doing this without Zaniolo. And Zaniolo is going to come back at some point in 2021. Now, we don't know in how much capacity or whatnot, but when you look at teams that have upside, Roma is definitely one of them, and they've been without Zeko for a little while. I'm very intrigued by Roma. I like them, but I'm not going to give them a huge chance. So basically, I'm going to give Roma and Napoli combined 10% chance to win. You can break it down how you want. I have Napoli 7% because I really do like their squad, and they've been without Osimhen a little bit. I fought against Inter. They were pretty unlucky. They just lack the Katsima, which you'll hear we got into it with a Napoli outsider, but I can't count them off completely. So I'm going to say Roma and Napoli combined 10%. You can give it, break it down whichever way you want. And look, I have to take Milan seriously. They've survived without Kier and Ibrahimovic. It hasn't been great, but it also hasn't been bad. They haven't lost either. They're the only team with Juve that haven't lost. Ibra is coming back. There really could be something about this team of destiny thing with Milan. So I'm going to give them a 20% chance, which I still think really is quite substantial. So that leaves me with 70% to play with. So I picked Inter to start the season. There was a couple of weeks where I felt really, really bad about this pick. The defense looked really terrible for a while. But I think Conte, as you mentioned, this is his bread and butter. This is the way he wants it. Just one competition. He's trying to create an us against the world type of mentality. So I'm going to give Inter a 38% chance to win the Scudetto. I'm going to leave 32% chance for Juve because, again, I think it is pretty close. I think Juve is closer to competing to Inter than Milan is to either of the two. And I think that's pretty fair because I think in the long run, the squads are going to come through. But I still think Milan deserve to be in the mix. So for me, Juve, of course, they have De Ligt at the back. They have Ronaldo up front. I think their midfield's okay. I think you can get by with it. The problem with Juve's midfield is it's the collection of guys who ideally are your second and third best midfielder. They lack that one guy to anchor the unit, but I think they have enough there, and they are much better on the wing than they've had than they've been in recent years. So that's my breakdown. I'm going to go Roma-Napoli combined 10%, Milan 20, Inter 38, Juve 32. So before we get to 1,000 name, Alex, I want to ask you this. This is a curiosity because yesterday I was watching Roma and I was tweeting, you know, how impressed I am with Mkhitaryan. And then I tweeted out that Mkhitaryan, in my opinion, is just a notch below the conversation for MVP and Serie A. And the other candidates are, of course, Zlatan, who I think still is the right choice, although he's missed games. You have Lukaku at Inter and you have Ronaldo at Juve. One thing these players all have in common, they are former Man United players, and granted, some from different eras. But what do you make about this, Alex? Do you think that says anything at all about Serie A, about Manchester United, agents, anything at all? Like, what's your reaction when you see that?
It's an interesting question because obviously Ronaldo is certainly from a different era, at least when he played at Manchester United. And then Mkhitaryan and Lukaku, closer in age, but still separated by 4 years. But there's way more overlap there, you could say. And you could also say that maybe they weren't used the best. Obviously, Lukaku had a bit more of an impact at Manchester United, but I still think Manchester United fans could say, that didn't go as we hoped. So, I don't know. I'm a little nervous that I'm actually just going to say that this is Manchester United. Even when they're in a down spell, they get good players that if they don't know how to use currently because they're not a functional club, well, they're still good players, and then they go to other good leagues and good teams and show that they're good players. So, in a weird way, David, I think I kind of just gave Manchester United a compliment. Meaning even their, I can't call them throwaways because I'm also saying they're using them wrong, but even their discarded players or players they got rid of can prove they're really good players out of their teams. But I also want to compliment Serie A because they're fielding these good players clearly, who, by the way, were good before they got to Manchester United. And the players are viewing it as a good platform to strut their stuff, and the players don't view it as this huge step down or anything like that. It's just a new home at a new top club. So I think it kind of shines a good light on Serie A and the fact that when you go from Manchester United, who commercial-wise are like the biggest club in the world, let's be real. When you go from that team, well, even top players like Lukaku, who's so important to Belgium, so important to Belgium. Like, he's a star. He is a star. He's a very well-known name. He has no problem playing at Inter. He views that as playing at another top club. And Mkhitaryan, he definitely didn't get the fair shake at United that other players have got. But he knows he's a top player. And I'm sure he's filled with pride that he's doing well for such a historic club like Roma. So I can't find a commonality, and I'm interested to hear your answer, a commonality of what it specifically says about Manchester United or these players or Serie A. Because there is that difference in age and kind of era. But I do think it shows, well, yeah, Manchester United, whether they're running well or not, they get good players. And shame on them if they don't know how to use them, because another top team out there will use them correctly. So that's kind of my take, David. It's a very interesting question, though. What about you?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And look, you know, it might not mean anything. It might be a pure coincidence. You know, I'm curious how many people, you know, saw that tweet and instantly were like, well, this proves Serie A is a farmer's league and the PL is much better. There's also been quite a few Premier League players that have struggled in Serie A. We've talked about some Serie A players who in the past did very poorly in the Premier League, and yes, and recently it's been better. So I don't know if it really says much about that. I think too, also the role players, you know, doing so, former Man United role players, and we see a lot of them in Serie A doing well. And then of course Di Maria at PSG, look at how different he's perceived there. So yeah, I think you make a great point. It definitely shows that Man United are good at finding players. You know, the other thing that sticks out to me about, you know, those players being there is, you know, they did a lot of business with Mino Raiola. And Mino Raiola likes to do a lot of business with Italy and the Premier League. You know, you had Zlatan, Lukaku, and Mkhitaryan, who were all his clients there. So, yeah, I think it's pretty interesting that, you know, all these players are now doing really well in Serie A. Okay, let's take a look at what's coming up this weekend. Our friend Thousand Names sent us some picks for the upcoming games. Oh, Sassuolo Milan. Very excited by this game. So, as usual, we'll read his picks and I'll make them as well. We have Sassuolo hosting Milan, and Thousand has Milan winning 2-1, goal by Berardi and a brace by Kessie. And he says Pioli is going to hold on to the top of the standing by taking advantage of De Zerbi's limitations. You guys know that Thousand is not a big De Zerbi guy. And then he says Kessie is going to teach Ronaldo how you take a penalty, but that Ciccio Caputo is embarrassing. In Italian, Sassuolo Milan 1-2, Berardi, Kessie, doppietta. Pioli mantiene la vetta sfruttando i limiti di De Zerbi. Kessie spiega a Ronaldo come si tira un rigore. Caputo imbarazzante. This is a great game. Very much excited by this. It sounds like Ibra might play here. I have to say, I was really hoping that my Sassuolo would really put even more pressure on Fiorentina. They didn't beat them this weekend. I have a feeling this is going to be a draw, and I have a feeling this is going to be one of those games where we expect a lot of goals, and it's actually going to be 0-0. So I'll go 0-0 this match. Next up, Juve traveling to Parma. Thousand has it 1-1, so Thousand has another draw for Pirlo against the provincial side. He has goals by Bruno Alves and Dybala, and he says Pirlo just can never win. And he says Cristiano is going to be humiliated by his compatriot who's going to score on a free kick. We know Bruno Alves is very good at those. And he says Bonucci is going to be ridiculous and not in a good way. In Italian, Parma, Juve 1-1, Bruno Alves, Dybala, Pirlo non vince mai. Cristiano umiliato dal suo connazionale su calcio di punizione. Bonucci ridicolo. I'm going to have Juve winning, and I'm going to go all in. Kulusevski needs a good game, faces his former team. I hope Pirlo plays him. I'm going to go Juve 2-0, and I'm going to give Kulusevski a brace. I'm going to be really optimistic here. Last match, another really good one. Atalanta hosting Roma. Thousand has Roma winning 2-0. Thousand's riding the Roma train. Virtu and Mkhitaryan. And he says Gasperini has broken his toy. And he says it's really impossible to explain why Muriel is once again on the bench. I have to say Zapata been really bad this season. Really bad. And he says, Alex, your boy Pedro is a former player. Disagree. He's been excellent. This is an intriguing match because Roma is really fun. I thought Atalanta against Juve were quite good. You know, I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with a draw. I'll go 1-1, and I'll give a goal to Muriel and one to Dzeko. Okay, Thousand Name, thanks, as always, for your game picks. So before we get to Napoli Outsider, which you'll hear, everyone will hear that part. Just a plug for Patreon. If you enjoy Calcioland, definitely consider becoming a patron. You will hear a much longer version of this interview with Napoli Outsider, where we break down Serie A. He comes on once a month. I think that in and of itself is worth the $3 subscription, but you also get longer versions of our episodes. Join a cool community. For a higher tier, you also get some excellent articles. And we use this program to cover production costs and also make a nice donation to a great cause, the Insuperabili in Italy, which run calcio camps for kids with disabilities. Well, it's a big treat for me today, or my monthly chat with my good friend Napoli Outsider. So as usual, we're going to chat about Napoli at the top. That'll be available to all. We are recording this on Thursday, the day after the game against Inter. And then him and I will get into the big storylines in Serie A for our patrons. So my good friend, thank you for coming on once again. Bentornato to Calcioland, Napoli Outsider. Always a pleasure to have you on.
It's always a pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's start here. I know it was a loss, but I thought Napoli played pretty well yesterday against Inter. But I want to ask you more of an overview of the season so far. So if you had to pick one word to describe what you've seen from Napoli in this current campaign, what would it be and why?
I would say predictable. I mean, I know it's a strange one, but I think we are getting to where we could predict, even though we're doing it in an unpredictable way, but the results are predictable. Napoli are fighting for fourth place, for the top four spots. That's what we expected. They have had their usual blackouts, you know, especially in front of the goal. I think last night was a good example. I think Napoli outplayed Inter, especially when they were left down in 10 men and they just played with fury, but they kept missing chances. And then maybe they'll score some incredible goals when they're up 3-0 or 4-0 with other teams. So that's kind of the usual stuff, you know. I was upset for last night because I didn't think Napoli deserved to lose, but ultimately, you know, Napoli is in line exactly for what they set out to accomplish. So I think in the end, it is kind of a predictable situation. And when you add up what's going on in the Europa League, that's just more of the same. Napoli won a tough group, but they won it playing really poorly. In fact, you know, when I look back at this year's league losses, Napoli lost three times. And I would argue that against Sassuolo and against Inter, they didn't really deserve to lose. Against Milan, they did. Against Milan, they did. Even though, even with Milan, they had the chances to tie the game, but they did deserve to lose. Against Inter and Sassuolo, they didn't. And instead, in the Europa League, it was kind of the opposite. Napoli did win the group, but they probably deserved to lose at least three games in that group. And even the ones they didn't lose, they played poorly. I do not recall really good performances there. And it's just, you know, one of those seasons where they're set out to accomplish a goal in the league, and they probably will, hopefully. And they don't really care about the cups, at least not so far. We'll see what holds for us, but what the future holds for us. But the thing is, yes, again, it's been unpredictable. We've seen Napoli win 6-0, a couple of 4-0 games, and actually three times they've scored four goals. We've seen weird things go on, and you know, different styles of playing within the games. Even last night, I thought there was an interesting tactical move by Gattuso, you know, with the build up with three men at the back and having Insigne actually stay behind Mario Rui when Napoli had the ball. That was really interesting. But in the end, you just look at where Napoli are today, and you got to be happy with it. And it's kind of what we expected before the season started. So it's strange but predictable, I would say. I know it's an oxymoron, but I think it works for me.
I agree. Let me ask you, I have another word, and maybe you can try to describe what it means in English, and it's the word katsima. And I'm going to ask you if you think this team has it or lacks it. So that's maybe the word I have for this Napoli. But first, try to explain, and you're so eloquent, try to explain to our listeners what that actually means.
It's really, really tough. Actually, I wouldn't even be able to explain it in Italian, like, really well. But the thing is, I would say it's a mixture of things. First of all, you know, determination, Connery, even, you know, being, it's Connery, it's being smart, it's being arrogant in a good way. It's being tough. It's being determined. You know, when you see a guy like Ibrahimovic, that's a guy who would have Katsima, for example, right?
Yeah.
Even though he's not from Naples. But, yeah, I think this team lacks it because sometimes you see it, but you usually see it when things are rolling their way. This Napoli team is a really good team when things are breaking their way or when they just let loose. You know, like, for example, when they were down in 10 men last night.
Yeah.
But when things are tough, you know, their legs shake a little too much sometimes, or they try to overthink. They get a little paralyzed. I don't want to say that they're scared, but I think they lack exactly that kind of cynical determination, that katsima, that extra little bit that would make a difference. And maybe it is because of the lack of it in some of its veteran players. But I don't know. I mean, sometimes you would like to see Napoli play all the time like they played the last 20 minutes last night. But
yeah.
That doesn't happen. It just happens when, you know, when either they let loose or things are going their way. In those moments, you see the real Napoli. But in other moments, they're either too cautious or they overthink or maybe they are scared. I don't know. But they almost play without, you know, it's almost like they have the brakes on sometimes. And that upsets me a little. I mean, someone who has Katsime in Napoli is probably Lozano. I mean, Lozano gets
yeah.
the ball and he attacks the defender whenever it happens. You know, he tries to sneak up behind you. He attacks you. He tries to dribble around you. Other Napoli players, they will just pass it back. They will retain possession. They will not try the hard play all the time. You know, the tough one. They will try to retain the ball. But you see a guy like that, I think he has it. Just to give you an example for our listeners who might wonder, like, who might have it in Napoli. I think, for example, Manolas has it, and
Koulibaly
doesn't, probably.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good way.
As great as he is, I think that explains what it is, really.
I like it. Okay, let's talk about the midfield, because Bakayoko, for a while, was rightfully praised, you know, as a very good addition, fit in really well, had done well with Gattuso, but which look of the midfield do you like better? The one where he's playing in front of the defense, or a more classic 4-3-3 with two mezzala and a central midfielder? Which one do you think works best, or do you think Gattuso's doing well alternating a little bit between the two?
That's what I would do. I would alternate. And I think it depends on the game, and it depends on who's available. If you're playing with three midfielders, then you gotta do without Bakayoko, I think.
Yeah.
It's better to have a guy like Demme right in front of the defense, maybe even Lobotka with two mezzalas. But if you're going to play 4-2-3-1, I think Bakayoko, especially with Demme on the side, but even with Fabian, it depends. But especially with Demme on the side, that's like a wall. You saw last night, for example, Inter could never get through the middle. There was no danger, absolutely. But the thing is, that version, when it has to build up play, and when it's hard pressed, it's obviously outnumbered by the opponents. So you can't always use it. You can only use it in certain games, but you can't always use it. On the other hand, the 4-3-3 formation, it might leave you a man short on the offense. So it really depends on the game and on the moment. Personally though, I like last night's formation more. The only thing is, when you have a guy like Zielinski, now he can move between the two positions. He can play trequartista, he can play right behind the forward, or he can play as a mezzala. Against Sampdoria, he played as a mezzala. It was a 4-3-3. You had Fabian and Zielinski as mezzalas. It was just like that. And then against Inter, Demme took Fabian's spot, and all of a sudden it was a 4-2-3-1. So having Zielinski actually allows you, within the game, without making an actual substitution, to change between the two, and it can give fits to the opponent. So I like that a lot. But obviously, once Osimhen comes back, I think the 4-2-3-1 will be a better formation, period.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about Osimhen next. Obviously, it was an injury that hurt Napoli. I thought he had gotten off to a very good start. So how concerned are you with what happened to him, and what we can expect for him to be back? And the other thing I want to ask you is Petagna. I think he's a good player. I thought it was a good signing for Napoli. What did you make of him so far, and what role do you see him having moving forward?
Now, let's start from the bottom, actually. Let's start from Petagna, because I think he deserves it. I think he's doing very well. He scored 3 goals. 2 of them actually sealed the 3 points for Napoli. Last night, he hit the post in the 92nd minute. He outplayed De Vrij. I think he played better than one of the best defenders in Serie A. And on that final play, he really turned on him big time. It was something like, you know, a really high-class center forward. I think he is in the right role. I think he's the backup to the first striker, the backup to the main striker. He cannot start on a regular basis, but I think as a backup, and especially against smaller teams, he's going to do his part. You know, maybe score 5 to 7 goals a year, give a breather to the starter. Now, obviously, if he has to play every day, that's kind of a different situation. With Napoli, he is in the right spot for me, and I think he's doing well, and I think Napoli did a really good job to get him for relatively cheap.
Yeah.
Moving on to obviously assuming that's, you know, it was a really tough blow because these were some of the most important games of the season so far.
Yeah.
And completely missing him and actually having to play last night without him and Mertens in the end was really, really painful. But I don't know, you know, those injuries, those shoulder injuries, sometimes they do become chronic injuries. I mean, I remember when Vlad Kirikesh first had it, and it didn't seem like much. And then all of a sudden, basically, he was out every 2 or 3 months having to nurture it. On the other hand, De Ligt also had it, and he seems to have recovered just fine. So it depends, I guess, to which he injured his shoulder. And we do not know that yet. At least I don't know that because I'm not a medic, and even if I were, if I were a doctor, I did not see his scans. But in general, I wouldn't be too concerned because I would say most of the guys do come back fine. So one of the reasons that he hasn't come back yet is because Napoli do not want to rush it. So they want to make sure he comes back healthy. And that's actually positive because basically Goulam's career was derailed by the fact that he was rushed back.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing. They're expecting him back in January. Actually, right now, he's already training full-time. He just doesn't play the mini-games with the teams because they're trying to keep his shoulder away from tackles and everything. But aside from that, he's already in full shape, and he's already doing every other exercise that does not imply contact. So they will reintroduce contact in the next couple of weeks, and probably in January, he's going to be available.
Okay. Recap a little bit what we've seen this season so far by looking at it this way. So I want to ask you, tell me 2 players on Napoli that surprised you in a positive way so far this season and 2 that you were expecting a little bit more from.
Now, anybody else would probably have to mention Lozano.
Yeah, for sure.
Me. Okay. Not me, because you're talking about who was surprised, and there's no surprise here for what he's been doing, okay? In fact, if anything, I expected him to do it last year as well. So I'm just happy about that, but I'm not surprised. The surprise, first of all, has to be Bakayoko because, you know, I knew that he would fit in Gattuso's plans, but not this well. And he literally allows Napoli to play 4-2-3-1. He's the only one because then they can play in both situations, with both styles of play. I'm not sure anybody else is that apt to play the Bakayoko role, though. So he is the X factor in midfield, and I didn't think he would, you know, start so well. I thought he would take a few weeks just to get back into shape or something, but no, he's been good right away, and so I've been impressed. And the other one is Politano. Politano has shown that he's more than just a bench warmer. You know, a lot of people, when he was purchased, and, you know, just like I've been bragging about saying that Lozano, I knew Lozano would be good, I've got to put myself in the corner on this one because I was not a big believer in Politano. I've got to be honest. I knew he was going to be better than Verdi, but not this good. And he's been really good for Napoli. So he's been almost a starter. When he's playing, you know, there's no love lost there. He can substitute Lozano. He can substitute even Insigne at times. So these are the 2 guys that I really didn't expect much, and they've been doing very, very well. And it says a lot that, you know, I'm not mentioning Petagna after all that praise.
Yeah.
But these are my 2 names.
I think Politano has a little Katsima in him, no? He's I feel like he's...
Yeah, but it's not consistent. Like, when he's on, you can see it. But sometimes, you know, for example, the whole of last season, he was just passive on the field. But this year, oh, he's showing a lot of it, man. He's showing a lot of it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be writing a column ranking Napoli players by Katsima. That'll be a fun column. Okay. All right. Disappointed. Any two? Did you already mention those two that let you down?
Yeah. I mean, certainly Elmas. I expected him to take the next step. And also Zielinski, because he's played well in the last two games, but nothing before that. Now, both of them, though, they do have a big, huge justification, which is that they caught COVID, obviously.
Yeah.
That being said, they've been healthy for quite a while now. So it's one of two things. Either, you know, COVID actually does take you a while to get back. I mean, I know that Zielinski actually had symptoms. You know, most soccer players have been asymptomatic, but Zielinski did have symptoms. So maybe it takes you a while when you get hit hard by it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that regardless of the reason, they have not provided what I've been expecting from them so far. Now, Zielinski is promising. He's looking a little better. Elmas is still looking bad. I think he's looking worse than last year. You can't say that for many Neapolitan players, but you can say it for him. And again, I'm picking them, although I'm already providing a justification for their behavior. So we'll see in the next 3 or 4 months, if they pick themselves back up and they play well for the next 3 or 4 months, then we can just chalk it up to COVID.
Yeah.
And then we can take it out on Lobotka, who would be the next in line for disappointment. But otherwise, you know, I expected Elmas to break out, and I expected Zielinski. I don't want to say to take the next step, but at least to be at his best, which he hasn't been at. So.
Yeah, no, I think with COVID, we really have to give up players a break. I mean, you're seeing Havertz, Dybala. I mean, these are there's definitely seems to be a big theme there with that. I think we chalk it up. All they come back, they tested negative, they're fine. I think that's way too simplistic.
I actually think you make a good point on that. You mentioned a couple of guys who are really good and who have been really bad. So, it's probably due to that. Then let's just take it out on Lobotka. It's got to be Lobotka.
There you go. There you go. Okay. Well, January window is almost upon us. And this is something you and I have also been talking about more in private. Like, Napoli is in pretty good financial shape compared to a lot of other clubs. But this is going to be a very difficult window because no one has any money. So it's going to be a challenging market even for Napoli, who are in pretty good shape. So let's say you can improve just one position or one aspect of Napoli. What would you target in the next few weeks during the January window?
Left back. No question. No question, not even a start. I mean, it's just like such an easy answer for Napoli. It's got to be left back because right now Mario Rui is playing all the significant games. Uzai has been out now for quite a while with COVID. Goulam, like, he really struggles even just playing 10 minutes. So I'm sorry to say, Goulam is 29 and he's really looking like a finished player. It just hurts my heart because at some point I thought he was one of the top five left backs in the whole world.
He was so good,
He was unbelievable when he got hurt, but that was it. So Napoli really need the left back. But you do make a really good point. Napoli are in good financial shape. The balance sheet from last year was published, and it even showed as much. Napoli are doing well, but the problem is you cannot add without subtracting.
Yeah.
You cannot just keep on piling players. So that's going to be an issue because you've got to give somebody out. You've got to send somebody out before you can buy. And with no team having money, it becomes hard to shed players. You just think about the fact that Napoli actually started the season with players like Malqui and Llorente, and they have had no use for them, absolutely no use for them. Or even Milik is still on the team, but he's not getting used, and he cannot be used because he's out of the list. So the thing is, until Napoli can get rid of these guys and maybe somebody else, then it's going to be tough to add. But once they do, and if they do, I think the first thing they'll look at is a left back. And the second thing would be a right back, because wing backs are the weakest position in Napoli. And they're probably the only position of weakness right now.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. That's definitely the area there. So speaking of Milik, let's talk a little bit about him. He was back in the news. This one today we're recording Thursday. There are rumors of him that Juve are still they still have him on their radar. I'm so not surprised with the fact that he's a Bosman player. So tell me, what do you think's gonna happen with Milik in the coming weeks? Obviously, Napoli are in good financial shape, but you know, losing a player of his caliber for nothing is also something that you would try to avoid. So if you had to guess, what do you think is going to happen to Milik in the coming weeks?
Oh, he's going to be sold. I think he's going to leave in January. Unless, obviously, he's already got an agreement with Juventus for the summer to go there for free, which would open a whole long discussion about how Juventus got in touch with a guy at the time when he had more than 1 year left on the contract. And, you know, that's not allowed, but that's just for another day. The point is that unless something like this happened, he's going to leave in January. The Polish vice president of the federation, he said that if Milik wants to play in the European Championship, he has to go on a team that will play him in January. So that actually was a big assist for Napoli, because now if Milik decides to leave on a free as a free agent in the summer, he's free to do so, but he's going to miss out on the European Championship. And that's actually kind of believable, because Poland are not that poor up front. And, you know,
yeah, I would say
Milik after 1 year without playing. Yeah, I mean, they have a pretty decent guy up there, right?
Yeah.
And if Milik is going to go like one full year without playing competitive games, it is a believable threat. So due to this, he might be willing to leave. Now, the problem is where? I'm sure that Napoli would rather sell him abroad, and I hope that some English team, because English teams do have the money, they seem to be the only one. So I hope that some English team comes out and just offers probably like some 20 million or something. But the more believable options at present are probably the two Milan teams, because one of them desperately needs a backup for Ibrahimovic, and you've seen it in the last few
games.
And
someone eventually replace him,
Right. And the other Milan team, well, what happens if Lukaku catches another cold and he's out for a few weeks in the right, or rather in the wrong moment? They end up having to play Lautaro and Sanchez. And Sanchez is always hurt. And obviously, Conte doesn't want to use Pinamonti. He'd rather use me up front or Ranocchi instead of Pinamonti. So the point is, Inter just do not have any backup center forward. But Napoli do have Politano, who is still formally on loan. So they could just waive out the payment on Politano and just pick up Milik for free, essentially. And I think that would satisfy both teams. And it would satisfy Milik himself, because he would get minutes on a team that's challenging for the Scudetto race, obviously, and are probably the favorites. So those are the two probably main options, unless he's already got an agreement with Juventus. But obviously, again, Napoli's favorite option would be giving him up abroad, even if they have to give up a little money, but just not having to face him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I like that Politano idea. I hadn't thought of it. That sounds like a better option than the swap for Vecino, right? You'd rather just own Politano and not have it, right?
I mean, yeah. Vecino has been out for forever, and he's 31 already. And given the way Bakayoko has been playing, I really don't see the need for him. And also, I think it just would work for both teams. No money gets taken out of the pockets. Napoli have more money for the summer, because in the summer they would have to buy out Politano. Now they could buy somebody else in the summer instead, and Inter would get a player without having to actually take out any money out of their pockets.
I think everybody wins. Yeah, no, I actually think that's a really good idea. I like it. So you already kind of
somebody should hire me, you know?
Yeah, no, well, other than me for the patron, you're absolutely right. All right. I think you already answered this earlier, but maybe it changes depending on how things go and said, yeah, but how much of a focus is the Europa League to Napoli, in your opinion, this season?
So far, it is not a focus, not at all. I mean, it almost looks like they stumbled on winning the group. Now, you cannot stumble on winning a group with the Real Sociedad, who are still leading in Spain, and they're leading the Spanish Liga. You know that basically the Spanish teams have been dominating in Europe, especially the Europa League, in the last 10 years or so. So if you beat the team that's leading the Liga, and in fact they were beating them even in the second leg, they just allowed a goal when it meant nothing. And well, it meant nothing to Napoli, it meant a lot to Real Sociedad, obviously. You know, that actually is a really good result. But you look at the way Napoli played, and it just was not good. I mean, it was just night and day with their league performances. And also AZ is a really good team in the Netherlands. Last year, they finished up with even points with Ajax. Now, if Napoli had beaten, think about this. Real Sociedad are even points with Real Madrid, I think, right now. And AZ were even points with Ajax. If Napoli had topped the group with Real Madrid and Ajax, we would be shooting fireworks, obviously. Now, it's not the same thing. I'm comparing a bit apples to oranges. But the point is that those were really two really good teams. So on a result basis, they did well. But looking at the performances, man, they really didn't want to play those games.
Yeah.
The worst games were almost with Rijeka, the Croatian team. It almost looked like Napoli, man. I mean... I was upset watching those games because you are still professionals. You still have to take the field and try to do your best, and it didn't look that way, at least for some of them. Now, that being said, we've seen this in probably since Mazzarri. The only year in which Napoli really challenged for the Europa League was under Benitez. In other years, they really didn't care much about it, and that was always disappointing for me because, for me, Napoli should try to win it.
They should?
You know, I think, I don't remember. I think it was Snai, the bookmakers, the Italian bookmakers. They had Napoli as the second favorites in the Europa League. Now, I don't think they're second favorites, but they're probably in the top five if they play their best.
Yeah.
Which means they have a chance. But if they're going to play this way, you know, they might go out with Granada, and if it's not Granada, it's going to be the next team. Now, all of this said, depending on how the league goes in the next 2 months, and if they squeak and sneak past Granada and they get maybe in the round of 16, they get a decent matchup, you know, maybe they end up in the quarterfinals and all of a sudden it does become a target because it's not right now, but it might become. And just like the Italian Cup, you know, that's what happens in the Italian Cup. No Italian team will ever say at the beginning of the season, hey, our goal this year is to win the Italian Cup. But if you do end up in the semifinals or even in the quarterfinals, then at some point, you know, you start smelling blood. And at that point, it does become a target. I mean, last year, I know it was particular, but the four teams in the semifinals really played it hard.
Because they did.
Obviously, they were coming back from COVID and all of a sudden, and it was good. It was nice to see. And it was an actual goal. It was the first trophy after COVID. It was really good. It does not always happen like that. But the point is, the Europa League for Napoli, and just like the Italian Cup, it might become a target, but it's going to become a target if they get lucky in the next few games and depending on the league. Otherwise, you know, let's say that Napoli are challenging for the Scudetto. Oh, man, they're going to go out crashing before you know it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, well, so you kind of talked about this at the top when you talked about predictable and how Napoli's goal is to be in the top four, and that's hopefully where they end up. But obviously, this is a really pretty crazy season. Milan is starting to drop points here or there. Inter are pretty close. Juve keep getting draws. It does feel really pretty wide open. So if you had to give a percentage to Napoli's chances of winning the Scudetto, what would be the neighborhood of that percentage?
Somewhere between 5 and 10.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You know, if Napoli played at their best, I would probably give you a higher percentage, especially in a year like this, because they have a really deep roster, probably the deepest in Serie A, at least the way Gattuso manages it, because clearly other coaches who do have deep rosters, they do not really trust some of the backups. So I would say due to their depth and playing at their best, and if they really believed in it, it would be different. But it's just the usual Napoli. So I think their goal is to end up in the top four this year, especially after a bad year last year, consolidate their Champions League position. So I still think Inter are the favorites and Juventus are right behind. I mean, we've stirred up a lot of stuff in these first few months, but it still looks that way to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, nobody else has shown something that's overwhelmingly better than those. So I think, you know, the true value of the rosters will come out in the end. And so my expectation is you Inter first, Juventus second, Milan and Napoli and Roma fighting for the other two Champions League spots.
Sounds about right. Sounds about right.